At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
The Killer Bees!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at D1 Training in the Woodlands. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Hey, one of the books, two to go. Second hour of the show. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM as we bring in our good friend Todd Callis. Thankful for all of the visits with TK throughout this season and all the improbable ups and downs. TK, right from the jump, we certainly appreciate you all year long, given your insight and everything that you do. It ended way too soon. We know that. And just from your thoughts, we knew Skubal was going to be a guy that best pitcher in the American League. You're going to have, you know, very minimal opportunities. You got to capitalize, but you know how good he is. But you still felt like you were going to be in the series, and with them going to, as AJ put, chaos on the last two games, you felt like this was going to be a longer and better series for the Astros.
Yeah, no doubt. And I'll reiterate what you said. It's always good talking to you guys every Friday. I love it. And hopefully we'll do it for many more years.
But amen.
Yeah, when you get into a best of three, the first game's obviously so critical. I think all but four of the division series, the wild card series, have been settled 2-0. So over the years, that's 20 of them, and 16 of them have been settled 2-0. So when you get one up, you're in a good spot. And Tarek Skubal gave them a great opportunity to get up 1-0 in that first game. Second game, they had a great chance to win. They needed more runs in the seventh inning, but they had tied it at 1 and had the base loaded, no outs, and only got one more run in that inning. That was unfortunate, but yeah, it's tough. Even here we are, 48 hours removed. It's still tough to realize that the season's over, because Astros fans just aren't used to having October 3rd, 4th, and the rest of the month free for Astros baseball.
Todd Callis brought to us by Gulf Coast Chevy Buick GMC in Angleton. You can start shopping for your new vehicle at LanceZCars.com. And on that point, TK, you look at Dana's press conference yesterday. You know there's some tough decisions that are looming. You know how, if you've got two guys like Tucker and Fromber on the verge of their final year under contract, that's when teams normally look to see if they can or can't sign them and then think about moving them. We know what they have to face with Alex Bregman at third base. How difficult of an offseason is this going to be for Dana Brown because of the limitations financially? And we all know the heartstrings are attached to so many of these guys.
It is going to be tough. I mean, yeah, this is the core, one of the core guys. But we've seen it before with George Springer and Carlos Correa and even Garrett Cole, and the first time with Justin Verlander. But Alex is almost, you know, a different level because he's been around longer than any of those guys. And he was here in the beginning of 2017, even part of 16. So all he's known in his full season to play with the Astros is either winning a division or getting to the ALCS, and in most cases, both. So, yeah, big-time tough decisions for Dana Brown and his crew. I don't know how it's going to play out. I do feel a little bit better as we sit here in early October than maybe I did in the middle of the season, because, you know, it feels like the Astros are going to make a push to get Alex Stein. Whether it's good enough or not, we'll have to find out. But there are going to be some big changes, even if Alex is signed, coming into next year, just based on, you know, Verlander, Kikuchi. You've got some decisions to make other than Alex.
Well, and you mentioned Kikuchi, and as much as we were all, I will just say, leery of what they gave up to get Kikuchi, I don't think any of us in our wildest dreams could have predicted that this guy was going to do what he did. The team was going to be 9-0 in his first 9 starts in an Astros uniform, and he did absolutely everything that they needed from whoever they had gotten at that deadline. You mentioned that I think we're all kind of under the pretense that Verlander's going to be gone. But do you think that there is a chance, because Kikuchi even mentioned, which is rare sometimes, to show his hand a little bit, that he really loved his time here and he hopes that there's an opportunity? He's probably going to have a pretty high value on the open market, but do you think there's a chance?
Yeah, I do. And I didn't know Yusei Kikuchi very well going into it. I didn't know him at all going into the trade. And then come to find out, he's one of the great teammates in that Astros clubhouse that you can imagine. Everybody loves him. He's got a funny sense of humor. It doesn't always come across in the media, but he understands English very well and can converse to you in English when he's not being interviewed in the media. So he's a guy that, like you said, he wants to be here. I know Dana Brown yesterday during the press conference kind of said, well, we've got a lot of guys coming back. We'll see where we are. That could be just Dana, you know, trying to set the table here too, where he doesn't want to feel desperate trying to bring Kikuchi back. But Dana also knows Yusei wants to be here as well. So I think it would be great to bring Kikuchi back. Dana Brown, one of the first things he told us is you can never have enough pitching. And even with a lot of those guys coming back, Luis Garcia looks really ready to go. And Javier, possibly after the All-Star break, we'll see where Lance McCullers Jr. is. But even with some of those guys coming back, T.P. Francis could be in the mix too. You still want to have a guy that will take the ball every 5 days and bring it. And you've got that in Fraber. You've got that in Hunter. If you can get that in Yusei Kikuchi, and if Rennell can follow up what he did this year with a full season under his belt, now all of a sudden you've got four core guys. And Spencer Arrighetti really came on the second half and showed no signs of fatigue. So to answer your question, I would love to see Kikuchi come back. Again, it all depends on where they end up with the tax threshold and how far they want this payroll to go.
You talked a little bit, too, about when we talk about pitching. We covered the starting pitching pretty well, but I'm curious from the standpoint of the bullpen. Penn Murphy, a guy that we heard about that was traveling. Kendall Graveman, another guy that has had a stint with this team to where you know what he is possible of doing. Chances those guys, one or both, are with this team next year.
Yeah, I think pretty good. I mean, Kendall is traveling with us pretty much every road trip. So he obviously likes what he sees here with the Astros. So if they can sign those guys on maybe an incentive-laden deal coming off of injury, I think you would see one or both of them back. I think they both like the time here. Penn was trying to come back, and we saw him a lot more in the first half of the season. Once he realized he wasn't able to make it back this year, we saw him a little bit in the second half, but he and Kendall were around most of the year. But you've got, for sure, you know, Hader coming back, and Presley option is vested, so he comes back. You know, Brian Abreu's back. Hector Neris is another guy that they would love to see back if the right deal was available. I don't think they felt like the price was right, what the Cubs paid him. But then you've got Taylor Scott. You've got Brian King. You've got other guys that really contributed a little bit at times this year to the bullpen that could make an impact next year as well. So more the merrier. More pitching the better, and the more options you have, the better. And Kendall Graveman and or Penn Murphy would be great adds to the 25 bullpen.
Okay. Just because of the fact that we want to lighten the mood a little bit, too, did you have a chance to catch up with A.J. Hinch? As much as you hate to lose, there's a guy I think this entire city, if the Astros aren't involved, would pull for and still believe in a lot. But that is one hell of a story from A.J. Hinch's perspective, to get back into baseball, to take a team like the Tigers, to get them hot at the right time, the run that they went on, similar to what the Astros did, and now to advance to the divisional series.
Yeah, I did catch up with A.J. a couple of times pregame. I did not see him after they won it all. But, yes, it definitely lessened the blow for me, and I'm sure other Astros fans. It was a tough day. It was a tough, bitter pill to swallow to get knocked down in two games against a roster that you feel like is not as good as your roster. So that hurt for sure. But A.J. is the guy you feel best about on that side. I mean, Jake Rogers, another good guy who I've gotten to know a little bit. Former Astro minor leaguer, happy for him as well. But, AJ has been, always will be in the future, a friend, and I couldn't be happier for him, even though it hurt a lot as an Astros broadcaster to watch what happened. But I'm cheering for him against Cleveland. I'll cheer for him against New York or Kansas City. I just hope the best for him, and that helped lessen the blow a little bit.
TK, when you step away from it, when the emotions kind of settle down a little bit, I think everybody needs to kind of marvel at what this team was able to do. And I've been very adamant. I never turned my back on a spot. And people, of course, when you lose a playoff series, are always trying to point the crosshairs at somebody. But I just think that what he did, he might have been the only guy, short of maybe a Dusty Baker, that could have pulled this team out of this hole and got them to where they did at the finish line of the regular season. But when you step back and you look at it, when you have some time, What are your favorite memories? Maybe what was that big positive turning point? What did you feel like were the memories you're going to take away from what was one hell of a run for this team just to get to the postseason?
Yeah, those are the memories, right? The fact that they went 7-19 and 12-24, and they were 10 games back after June 18th, having lost the first game to the White Sox. So there are various points in the season where it looked like, and you guys mentioned this to me earlier in the year, there were a lot of people jumping off the bandwagon. I'm like, fine, let them jump. But just don't jump back, because then it doesn't mean anything if you jump off. But, yeah, never give up on this team. I know there were a lot of people around the country who were giving up on this team, and there were even some people here within the Houston Metroplex who were giving up, Houston area who were giving up on this team. So, yeah, I always will remember that come from behind, you know, surge they made from June 19th all the way to the All-Star break, and then beyond that. It was helped out by the fact that Seattle didn't play great baseball during that time, but the Astros did it without Kyle Tucker, and they were poised to win the postseason. I really, truly believe they're as talented as any team in the American League and could have easily won another American League championship. I don't think they're quite as good as two or three, or maybe even, you know, probably two or three National League teams, but I think they're as good as anybody in the American League, and that's to me why it was so frustrating to see the early exit. But yes, Joe Espada, great guy with the temperament in that clubhouse, knows the guys very well. He was even keeled throughout all the struggles. I think he said even yesterday in the press conference, he learned a lot himself in that first year as a manager. And I think every year that he goes forward, you'll continue to learn. But that first year, it's hard to argue with what he did bringing that team to an AL West title.
Well, look, we appreciate everything and your honesty all season long, because I think as Astros fans, you mentioned the Tucker injury. Never has a group of fans learned more about a bone bruise in 3 months than we did. And yet on the flip side, never has a fan base still been more confused about the word discomfort. But at the end of the day, you've been so great about being so honest, and we really do appreciate you joining us, and what a pleasure it's been. So enjoy the off season, enjoy golf. Make sure Blummer keeps the scorecard right when you guys are golfing. And we look forward to doing everything to get you back next season.
Guys, I really appreciate the time we have every Friday. I look forward to it. It's a good shot all the time. You guys always bring good and insightful questions, and I try and be as honest as I can. You know, there's a couple things that they tell me that's off the record that I can't always share, but I try and give the fans as much honesty as I can whenever you guys ask me a question, whether it be a tough one or one about Tucker's shin contusion, which obviously turned out to be a little fracture. But I look forward to doing it all again in 2025, and I look forward to another long Astros run next year.
Well, you do a hell of a job on the air, and we do a great job with us. We appreciate you. Enjoy your offseason, and we'll catch up soon.
Thanks so much, guys. Take care.
There you go. Todd Kalas, TV voice of your Houston Astros, joining us all season long on Friday's compliments of all the good people at Gulf Coast Chevy Buick GMC in Angleton. Start your shopping for a new vehicle right now at LanceZCars.com. So there you go. You heard from Todd Kalas. You heard the last word after the last words after the press conference yesterday as the Astros try to move it forward and figure out what's next. What's next for us is we're going to keep the train moving along as we continue to cover all kinds of stuff on this Friday before football. Barry Laminack is in for Jeremy Branham. That means we've got plenty more to get to. DJ Bieniemy, the ESPN beat reporter for your Houston Texans, is going to join us later in the program. So we've got that going. Coming up next, we've got one of the guys that covers the Buffalo Bills on a day-by-day basis, Joe DiBiase in Buffalo. And the Buffalo Bills Radio Network is going to join us. Talk a little Bills-Texans next on the Killer Bees and the usual suspect version of them on a Friday here in Houston in the Woodlands.
You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at D1 Training in the Woodlands.
Hey, you heard the man coming to you live from D1 Training in the Woodlands. Grand opening tomorrow. They've been gracious enough to let us in today. Great athletic facility. If you want to come in and get some workouts, get some training, come see us. Right now, we're about to let you in on enemy lines as we go out to Buffalo, New York, in the home of the Buffalo Bills. Joe DiBiase covers the Buffalo Bills for the Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Does pregame there, does mornings 6 to 10. Joe, appreciate you spending some time with us. I'm curious from your perspective, we always like to get the outsider's perspective. Your perspective looking at this Houston Texans team from afar. Record looks good. We've seen a lot of things that need to get better. What are your thoughts on the Texans?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of, I guess it's not also 100% accurate when you look at their, like, point differential, but I was looking at that this week and seeing, like, they're third in the AFC South. How are they a point below the Titans? Obviously, schedule comes into that. The one game against Minnesota is a huge reason. I look at a team and see a very talented team that I think has the chops to make a deep playoff run that is just trying to figure out how to put it all together, maybe figure out what a couple of their weaknesses are, and then make good on that as the season goes on. So, and I also see a team now that probably has the leeway to figure things out as the season goes on, because I don't think they have much of a challenge in their division.
Joe, was I not paying attention when the season started? Because I'll be honest with you, man, when once Stephon Diggs left, I looked at this Buffalo team and I thought, okay, I don't know if this team is as talented as maybe the rest of everybody else mm-hmm. thought. I didn't see this team being as good as they have been so far. I thought, wow, Josh Allen is really going to be out on an island by himself. That was just what I thought. And maybe that's just my, you know, me being naive down mm-hmm. here in Houston and not paying attention. But I've been really impressed with this team and Josh Allen and this offense. What did I miss? What was I not paying attention to? Is this smoke and mirrors? I mean, this is crazy.
Yeah, no, I don't think fully. I mean, I wouldn't declare it over on their offensive side of the football in replacing Diggs and what the weapons look like. Defense, I do think that they have proven almost no matter who the players are, that Sean McDermott is going to coach that defense up to be a top 10 unit. Like, it's just automatic, even if they have backups in there. Now, last week, withstanding, I think if they do have one weakness, and it only usually pops up once a year, maybe at most, is if you're one of the elite physical teams of the league, that physical run teams of the league, I think you could get the Bills on that front. And that's how the Ravens were able to really get them out of their element last week, was they just had no answer for Derrick Henry. But when it comes to shutting down opposing offenses, when it comes to shutting down top wide receivers, go look at Sean McDermott's track record against Tyreek Hill, and it's breathtaking how over a five-year span, he's able to take one of the most dangerous receivers in football that he plays almost twice a year. And Tyreek Hill does not have a 100-yard gain in the regular season against Sean McDermott. So defensively, I think it's a lot about the coaching, and they have good players, maybe not a lot of stars. Offensively, it's still wait and see. Like, I'm still not sure about it. I think maybe they just had two incredible matchups for what they are trying to do, more yards after catch, shorter stuff for Josh Allen, players that can do more with the ball in their hands. But I think that can only take you so far. I think the Ravens dared them to throw the ball on the outside, to throw the ball to guys that were separating and getting open, and especially on the perimeter, and I just really question whether the Bills have those perimeter receivers that are going to make them kind of a all-around top offense in the NFL.
Joe DiBiase joining us, does morning 6 to 10 on WGR 550 in Buffalo, and he's a part of the Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Joe, you touched on exactly what we're going to next, and you knew it was bound to come up, but it's the Stephon Diggs mm-hmm. Bowl. As the team that he left, and the fact that you're still saying there's a chance that they may still need an outside threat, and the team that he joined, which I think, for the most part, has been a very, very happy marriage to this point, but people still are kind of a little antsy. Like, is there going to be a point where we see what happened in Buffalo, and how do you think all of this is going to play out with Stephon Diggs and the fact that everybody says there was no problems there, but what was the story there, and then how do you see it here?
Yeah, I think the parts of the Diggs story were always completely overstated, were completely misconstrued, because it often is something you'll see with other top receivers, that if they're not getting the ball enough, then you're going to hear about it. But Diggs never did that. Like, he really never did that. There was this big, long breakdown by Jeremy Fowler this week even about how it all ended with Diggs and the Bills. And he has team sources in there that have quotes littered throughout, and there are problems that are talked about, tension behind the scenes. Not one time did you see the amount of times he gets the football mentioned. So, to me, like, you can have your worries about Stephon Diggs. None of them, to me, are ever getting the ball. He's made comments in the past about completely being willing to, you know, when it was Gabe Davis in a playoff game, I will run the route and get 7 yards in the game if it means that you're going to go off and we're going to win the football game. There's clips of him in the past in Minnesota with Kirk Cousins on the sideline saying, don't worry about getting me the football, get it to the open man. I think Diggs, though, is on that, I don't want to say, I need like a better example than Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant, because they're just like two of the greatest athletes ever. Maybe Jimmy Butler in Miami, whoever you want to use. He is a psychotic winner. Like, I think maybe a big problem he has is he can't stand, he can't handle losing. And you could even say maybe to a fault that he can't handle losing. And I think here, it just, the same thing happened over and over. You hit your head on the same point of the ceiling. And I never even think it got that bad, but I think it just was a tension that they were finally ready to move on. So to me, when I look at his situation in Houston, at his age, and given that he's on a one-year contract, like, to me, I don't see the same problems that arose in Buffalo at the end arising in Houston.
Wow, that's interesting. I love the description of a psychotic winner. That's a fantastic way to put it. All right, what's the secret to beating this Buffalo team? I did see, by the way, injury report is out. Khalil Shakir out, Ed Oliver out, Taylor Rapp out, and Austin Johnson out.
And Von Miller.
Yeah, and Von Miller. So what is the key to, for the Texans to beat this Buffalo team?
Yeah, I wonder if they have it in them, because Baltimore just kind of put the blueprint out there, which is attack them through the run game, up the middle, try to get them out of what they like to do, which is back up, not let big plays over the top offensively, take the underneath, you know. And I wonder if Houston has the run game to be able to accomplish that. And then on the defensive side of the football, to me, the way to attack the Bills right now is to try to force Josh Allen to throw to the perimeter, take away the middle of the field, even without Khalil Shakir, which I do think is a big, big loss. He has been the number one receiver for this team so far this year. Kincaid over the middle. I think Curtis Samuel is probably going to play more snaps this week. He is someone that plays more over the slot, likes to do over the middle of the field. Get Allen, get the Bills to attack the boundary, because between a still very raw Keon Coleman, who has not been bad, but still not someone you want to throw a lot on his plate yet, and then just veteran one-year guys that are nearing the end of their careers, and Matt Collins and Marquez Valdez-Scantling, who are playing a lot of snaps right now. But to me, funnel the ball to those players and dare the Bills to win on the perimeter, I think, is the way to kind of limit them offensively right now.
All right, Joe, call it. How's it end? What's the score and why?
I think this will be a close game, but I would go with the Bills in this one, probably 27-24. Again, part of it for me is just I don't know that the Texans have it in them to play the same style that Baltimore did. Not that they should. They're a different team. The one strength that I think the Bills get over the top on Houston is Nico Collins, to me, looks like one of the five best receivers in football. If you've watched him at all, I don't think anybody would even disagree with that. He looks incredible. But the Bills, I mean, it's three 100-yard receivers in the last, I think, three seasons. Like, they are just so good at taking away your number one weapon. They're so good right now when it comes to boundary corners. I think Diggs is going to catch a lot of balls maybe underneath in this game and over the middle of the field. I think the Bills will limit Nico Collins, and I think that will be a huge reason why they're able to squeak out a win here.
Well, Joe, we appreciate your time. Always a pleasure catching up. We look forward to doing it down the road. That's Joe DiBiase. He does morning 6 to 10 on WGR 550 in Buffalo, and he's a part of the Buffalo Bills radio network. Joe, enjoy the game on Sunday, and we'll catch up real soon.
Thanks. You guys too.
There you go, Joe DiBiase. All right, coming up next, we're going to continue with the second half of the show, Barry. That means 90 in the books and 90 still to go, and plenty more that we have to get to, including DJ Bienemy, who covers the Houston Texans for ESPN. He'll be joining us at the top of the 5 o'clock hour, and we'll get into some more Texans. We'll get into what might be ailing the Houston Texans and what we might call it. All that and more coming up in the second half of the show. Stay right there. ESPN 97.5, 92.5 FM.
You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at D1 Training in the Woodlands.
Hey, 90 in the books, 90 still to go. Second half of the show starting right now on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM. Coming to you live from D1 Training in the Woodlands. This is the place to be if you need to get in shape. You want to talk to a trainer. You've got an athlete in your family, maybe a high school athlete, looking to try and take it to the next level. This is a place that can get it done. Joining us right now, Andy Kratt, one of the owners of D1. And D1, I've seen, is a franchise around the country, but I think that it's growing because of the fact that so many kids right now need to start earlier and earlier with their training when they want to get to the next level. Your family has experienced that. You've got kids that have played the next level. Talk to me about D1 and why it's so great for a family with kids.
Yeah, thanks, Joel. Yeah, absolutely. So one of the reasons why we wanted to start this program here is we saw an opportunity here in the Woodlands. My kids grew up playing sports here. But we saw an opportunity to really get kids trained at a young age, get them working with the right techniques, right goals, you know, getting them ready to be able to participate at a higher level with whatever sport they want to participate in. And that's what this facility offers. We are the place for the athlete, like you mentioned. We've got certified world-class trainers here. And they are here to help the kids get to where they want to be as an athlete.
Absolutely. I think the questions, especially even as a parent, but I remember, even growing up, when do you start a kid at what age to getting into weight training? And then how important is it that when they do start that they get someone that knows what they're doing so that you don't start by doing it the wrong way and then have to be retaught the right way?
Yeah, absolutely. So we actually have a rookie class where we bring kids in as young as 7 years old. And we don't start them on weights at that age. We start them working on balance, working on movements, a lot of body weight exercises, getting their bodies ready to be able to lift weights when they're old enough and their bodies are developed enough to lift weights. So we typically start lifting weights at the end of the Devo age range, which is about 12 to 13 years old. And that's when kids are basically in junior high school. And that's when we start teaching them the proper techniques. Because if you start with the wrong techniques, you can really put yourself at risk for injury. And that's what we want to try to prevent here. As kids get stronger, they build the strength around the muscles they need. They learn the techniques so that when they are playing at that high school level and they want to be able to be ready to play at that D1 level, they've got the proper training and the proper strength for their bodies to be able to handle that.
I think there's a trend that has started to happen and that a lot of people don't realize is that if you're going to be competitive and if you really have aspirations of playing D1 sports, you can't just start in high school, right?
No.
I mean, those days are gone. That's what, like, my dad and our granddads did is I'm a sophomore or junior in high school. I'm going to start playing now. It starts at 7 years old.
That's absolutely true. And what we want to try to do is bring kids in here because a lot of kids are so sports specific now that they focus, say, if they're playing select baseball, say at 10 years old, all the way up through high school and college, imagine how much stress that puts on that joint, how many throws, how many pitches they're doing. So we want to get them in here in their off season and get them, get them rehabbed, get them conditioned to when they can, when they're ready to play in the season, their bodies are ready to take on that load, that workload. And it gives them a little break and a little bit of different types of training, which will help them improve in their primary sport.
So let's also talk about the fact that Andy Kratz joining us. He's one of the owners here at D1 training here in the Woodlands. And you obviously have a really good focus on the high school kids and the younger kids as they start their training and development. But what about just the people out, near your facility that say, hey, look, I've been meaning to get back in the gym. But again, kind of the same thing you were talking about. I don't want to get in the gym and do it the wrong way.
Right.
I need someone that can kind of guide me down the path to do it the right way and see the results.
Yeah, absolutely. And the way we look at athletes here, like I said, is the place for the athlete. Well, everyone's an athlete. It just depends upon
what. You hear that, Joel?
There's hope for you,
Barry.
Right.
I'm an athlete.
No. That's right. Yeah, so we bring you in. We work with you. We figure out what is your why? Why do you want to be able to run a 5K? Do you want to train for a marathon? Do you want to be able to, bench 200 pounds? Whatever it is that you want to be able to do. And then we can develop a specific program with our training staff to get you to that goal. And we offer everything from nutrition to regular check-ins. We have the in-body system here where you can get on the machine. It'll give you a readout of your body weight, your body fat, your skeletal muscle mass. And so we track all of that. We track your progression towards that goal. We meet with you, you know, usually once every couple weeks to check on that progress, see if we need to tweak anything. And then obviously our coaches, whether it be in a group session or a personal training session, they work with you on your techniques, your form, make sure that you're doing the lifts the proper way so that you're not going to put yourself at risk of injury.
What's one of the advantages of – I mean, the group sessions are great, but what's one of the big advantages of getting one of those personal sessions, one of those one-on-one sessions?
Well, so in a group session, you can have it anywhere from, you know, 5 to 15 people in one session, and you don't get a lot – well, you do get one-on-one in the group sessions, but you would get even more of a one-on-one experience in a personal training session. And that personal training session would be a little bit different workout tailored to your specific needs, and where you would work with that coach on what it is you want to develop. And that workout would be more specific to that need versus our group workouts, which are kind of – we use a software that sets our workouts on a weekly basis. So we go through like a 6 or 8 week cycle with our group workouts, whereas a personal training session would be more specific to that individual's needs.
So do you always get the same coach, or do you, but you'll have like the same workout plan, but
yeah,
it could be with a different coach?
Absolutely. So it would depend upon which coach you wanted to,
to
come in and, and do a personal training session with. We have a staff that's got a lot of diverse background. We have a powerlifting coach, we have a strength and an agility coach, we have a strength coach, so we have a coach who played college soccer, so we have all different kinds of coaches here, and it really just depends upon which one you kind of have the best, you know, rapport with, and you know, based on what your specific needs are. But the group workout schedule, obviously that just differs on the coach's availability and what hours they can work.
So tell everybody how to get in touch with you guys and how they get more information. Big grand opening tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got our Instagram page, D1 The Woodlands, Facebook page, D1 The Woodlands. We've got our website, which is also d1thewoodlands.com. You can give us a call, or please stop by tomorrow anytime between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m., and we'll be here.
Andy, we appreciate your time. Andy Kratt, owner of D1, thanks for having us out. It's a wonderful facility. I especially appreciate you spending some extra time with Paul Gallant trying to develop his calf muscles today. That was absolutely enjoyable to watch.
Good luck.
Yeah, thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. Thank
Always good
much.
To talk to Andy, and you guys need to come out and check this place
beautiful
out. It's
place,
brand new,
man.
And it's beautiful. A1 training here in the Woodlands. It is A1. I'm sorry, D1, but it's A1. That's what I meant to say. We'll be back with a whole lot more on the show. Coming up at 5 o'clock, DJ Bieniemy, who covers the Texans for ESPN, is going to join us with a preview of Texans-Bills. And I've got an illness that the Texans have. Have they been cured, doctor? And what are we calling such illness? That's coming up next. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at D1 Training in the Woodlands.
Hey, you heard the man, and we've got a plan. We're at D1 Training here in the Woodlands. Grand opening is tomorrow. We're in here today. You need to check it out. It's a phenomenal new facility.
Beautiful.
It is the best in the business, and when you're talking about the possibility of getting someone in shape or working with a high school athlete trying to get to the next level, this is the place you need to be, and this is all that you need to see when you're starting to think about what to do to take that next step. As we talk about the next step, Barry, we talk about the fact that Buffalo's the next game on the schedule. We appreciate Joe DiBiase of the Bills Radio Network joining us, and we talk about the Texans. Look, one thing he didn't mention that we all know is that this offensive line has struggled mightily and contributed at a very, very high rate to the amount of penalties, double digits, in the last several weeks for the Texans. Doctor, give me the news. Is the tonsillitis going to end this week? Because that's what I'm going to call it. Because it started with Laramie. It has absolutely spread, like Sean Mapes spreads germs in the studio, across the offensive line, to the standpoint where our entire offensive line is sick and they all have tonsillitis.
I love that.
The fact that D'Amico said a week ago, we've addressed it, and yet we hit double digits again. Is this the week that we finally see the progress to say, okay, they're over it, or is tonsillitis still spreading?
Well, first of all, it's a fantastic name.
Thank
Second
you.
Of all, Look, you kind of knew. Look, we've always given Laramie Tunsil a pass, right? It's always been like, well, you know, Tunsil's going to Tunsil. He's always good for one or two flags a game, but he's one of the better left tackles in football, so he kind of got away with it. And but it's gotten bad. It's gotten real bad. It's gotten out of hand. And you can fade Laramie Tunsil doing it if nobody else is doing it, but if they're all doing it and his is getting worse – then it's really become a problem, and it's affecting the game. It's affecting, it's not just causing, it's drive killing.
Yes.
It's game ending. It is an issue, and it's getting worse, and it has to be corrected. And look, let's be honest, man. I hate to say this because I love D'Amico Ryans. I love this team. I love everything about the Texans and what they've done in the last year plus. I mean, really, and you know me, I hated this team while Bill O'Brien and Redfish, Bluefish, I always forget his
David Culley.
No.
Oh, Easterby.
Yeah, while they were here, you know that. And I couldn't stand it, but I props to everything they've done. This is a coaching problem.
It is.
When a team lacks discipline, that is on the coaches, and this is on D'Amico Ryans, and it is his problem to fix, and he has to be accountable for it, and I think he will be.
Well, it's his coaching staff, right?
Yeah, it's his coaching staff, but it starts and ends with him because he is the head coach.
I didn't know the offensive line coach's name going into this season.
Yeah.
The fact that I do now is only because of all the negativity and all of the penalties and all of the false starts and all the things we've seen. Four games in a row, CJ's running for his life. You mentioned it. You hit it on the head. Every time they got a big chunk play, even against Minnesota when they needed it, called back by penalties. Saw it again last week. Big plays called back, and like you said, drive killers. But you got three straight games, 10-plus penalties in each of those games. It's a pattern, and it's going to keep repeating. And I, you know, you can give me lip service all you want about, oh, it's addressed. It's obviously not. And when you look on paper, you could say, oh, a year ago if you had these problems, I'm fine with it because you had to play musical chairs with your offensive line. You had injuries you didn't foresee, some you didn't plan for in the case of Kenyon. But over the course of time, they came together as a unit no matter what position they were playing, and they kept CJ upright. They're not doing that this year. It's one thing to say you're too penalized. It's another thing to say it's really hurting your quarterback and your offense.
Yeah, they're the most penalized team in the league. I just pulled up the stats. They have 40 penalties. Baltimore is second at 39, but they're the most penalized team in the league. They have 16 pre-snap penalties. It's just, you just can't function like that, and you're not going to be taken seriously as a Super Bowl contender like this team was preseason if you continue to have those type of problems. That is the type of team that goes, I don't know, 8-8. And, you know, maybe misses the playoffs, or I should say 8-9 or 9-8, and misses the playoffs. This is not a 12-win type of team that does those kind of, has this kind of mistake.
Well, short of
and this kind of lack of attention to detail, because that's what it is.
Short of the quarterback,
mm-hmm.
A lot, we can say this team is underachieved in a lot of different areas.
I would even say he's underachieved, Joel.
Who, CJ?
Yes. Well, don't you think?
But here's where I'm going with that.
Let me ask you. Have you think he's looked like the same guy as he did last year?
I think he has.
Through four games?
I think he has, based on what he's dealing with, based on the fact that he's constantly under pressure and the fact that
– I just think this whole team has looked awful.
And he hasn't had a running game. But where I was going with that is and we've talked about this in the past, and I've said that the quarterback is the single most important position in all of professional sports that's played from a team standpoint. But if you take the quarterback out of it, the offensive line is directly correlated to so many different woes that ail this team right now.
Yeah.
Because, yes, you're missing Mixon, but you have no running game because they're not doing their job enough there aside from the Indianapolis game. From a pass protection standpoint, they're not protecting him. He's constantly under pressure. He's constantly on the run. He's off script. He's moving the pocket. He's doing just to stay alive and stay upright. And then he's still able, to answer your question, he's still able to make plays a lot of quarterbacks can't make. Which is why I think he's still playing at a very, very high level. But then when you talk about what we thought was going to be a prolific offense, if you can't stop the other team's defense and you can't open up holes offensively and your quarterback is constantly going off script, your entire offense is off kilter and you can't just fix everything. But the crux of it is the offensive line is, aside from the quarterback, starting and responsible for a majority of it.
Yeah, I do agree with you there. I think that it starts and ends in the trenches. You know what I mean? It starts and ends up front, and that's for both sides of the ball, and we know that. That's always been the thing. And I think if the O-line is playing clean, then everything else falls into place. And we've seen that year over year with this team because the O-line has been trash for so long, and we've just gotten so used to this team having a garbage O-line that, you know, the last couple of years they've been pretty good. Some of the moves they've made and some of the guys they brought in has really drastically improved it. And this year it's just they've regressed quite a bit. Not necessarily, I think, from a play standpoint, they're obviously not playing as well as they could. But the penalties, and they have made some pretty bonehead plays, I think, you know, without penalties as well, and they're not holding up as good. But I do think, too, though, man, there's something about CJ's play this year that seems off to me.
I don't think so.
Yeah, there's to me, just watching him play.
What is it? I mean, he checks all the boxes.
I can't put my finger on it.
The touch throws, the pinpoint accuracy, the fact that even on off-script plays.
Don't get me wrong. Look, he still has – there's times when he still makes plays and you're like, wow, that's – you know, he's still a very skilled, fantastic, great quarterback. But he's playing – it's different. There's a vibe. Last year it was like no pressure, no expectations – and no, I don't know. There wasn't this requirement of greatness. But this year, all that's different.
But
right?
That's what you want.
You
and I don't
want
think,
it. And
I don't think he's done. I'm just trying to figure out what you think he's missing, just because of the fact that I don't think anybody looks at this team and says,
"Well, I mean,
he's been less."
Think about how many interceptions he should have had last year that weren't.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
Well, look how many interceptions he should have had this year that weren't.
There's been a couple, yeah.
Yeah, and he's gotten really lucky, and then he hasn't. He's already thrown a couple of interceptions.
Okay.
He's had some bad balls. I don't know, something seems off with this team as a whole. Like, it's
no one
like,
functions correctly with bad balls, like, but at the same time.
I don't know if it's a chemistry thing. I don't know if it is a, like,
but,
I just
but
don't,
if he
there
has
is
the
something
time,
off with this team as a whole.
You see where I'm coming from. If he has the time, because he's already shown you under duress, he still puts the ball exactly where it needs to be. He's more accurate than most. He feathers the ball over the first layer of the defense. He makes all the throws that you want your quarterback to make. And if you could fix that offensive line, he probably is the same guy and more than what you saw a year ago. But yet I still am not ready to say that he's been less than.
Well, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying C.J. Stroud is one of the 10 worst quarterbacks in football. I'm not saying that. I'm saying he's not playing the same as he did last year. There's something off. There's something different. It just doesn't, from my eyes, it doesn't look the same.
But
there's something
sacks.
Different. I can't even really tell you what it is. It just, there's something off about this offense. It doesn't
well
I,
but I think it's the offensive line.
I don't know what it is.
And Joe Mixon,
just I mean, like, I'm looking at it now, he's sixth in passing yards, and that's great, but it just seems like there's something off about him and the receiver. Maybe,
see, I just think it's the line.
I don't know, and Nick, you maybe you're right, and that maybe is it, but I've just, after almost every game, I've said things aren't flowing, and the eye test says to me, this doesn't look like the same team that it was last year.
I think we can agree to disagree on CJ, but I think overall, I don't disagree with you from a team perspective because of the fact that, one, when expectations are this high,
and that's what
everything
I was gonna say.
Is magnified.
Do you think that it's just the pressure of literally everyone is saying,
well,
this is a Super Bowl contender? And I think we've all kind of, whether you've said it out loud or thought it to yourself, this is kind of an AFC championship team or bust kind of year.
The schedule has always been a stickler for me. I've always said, but you haven't got to that meat of that schedule yet. But the schedule is one of the hardest four schedules, top four hardest schedules in the league. But at the same time, if I was to say that from a perspective of just the big picture, you've played all but one game without Mixon. You've played without Tank Dell for at least half of the games. You've played without Christian Harris. You don't have Autry until game six. So there's injury concerns there. But I think that's why I'm focused so hard on the offensive line, because you can rectify a lot of maybe what you're missing seeing from CJ. The passing game can get what maximize out of the three guys that you got at premier wide receiver positions. And if you can get some sort of an semblance of a running game for balance, then I think offensively a lot of what you're saying is lacking, I think, comes to fruition and you feel better about it. But unless you fix the line, and here's the problem, there are no injuries there. There is no guys out of place.
Yeah.
So that's where they just have to be better. And if it's coaching, I said this the other day and I mean this, he's not going to, the line coach is not going to survive the midway point of the season if it continues to go like this. And people laughed at me, but I said, go get yourself a Jeff Saturday to be the assistant line coach. Go get yourself a proven veteran that has been there, done that, that knows how to practice and knows how to break habits and knows how to teach these guys that they will listen to because they know that he's one of them and used to be one of them.
I was going to say, you know what I could see D'Amico doing is going out and getting a former Texan. A former
but
Texan.
Who would it be? Like Dwayne Brown?
Yeah, something like that. I could definitely see him doing something like
that. Is Dwayne Brown still hovering around the Jets?
I don't know.
I'm just saying, if you could get a guy.
I can see him doing something
like
that.
But I'll tell you this, and he's a little more old school, but when you talk about the fact that we talk about the Texans came out with the video today, kind of taking shots at Tennessee, but Bruce Matthews,
yeah.
You know, you get some of these guys.
He did. He took that video, right?
Yeah, right, to take shots at Tennessee about the uniforms and the color. I just feel like something is lacking in the coaching staff that is showing at least it's rearing its ugly head in terms of the overall solution to this problem. And I don't think that you've got players that you misread on talent-wise. I think there's too much talent, both from draft capital and from what they've done on the football field, to say that this team, this offensive line, should be performing this badly.
I agree 100% with you on that. I really do.
Well, let's get DJ Bieniemy in here then. Okay. We're going to take a break. We've got 1 hour to go in the show. DJ's going to join us, and he's going to talk about everything Texans. We've got the ins and the outs of who is going to be with us, who is going to be not playing on Sunday, and the key issues. Two in the books, one to go.
Thank
final
you.
Hour of the Jesus. Show coming up next on the Killer Suspects version of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.